This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodl Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
Well, today we're interviewing Dr. Andy Strong, who gave a colloquium here at JBCA about the high-energy interstellar medium. Could you tell us how you study the interstellar medium at high energies, and indeed what it is that you're looking at?
Well, what I was actually concentrating on, I'm visiting Manchester this week actually because there's two satellites which are actually flying at the present time, and one is called Planck, which you have heard in other broadcasts on this program, and the other one, which I'm really working on, is called Fermi. And Fermi was a famous physicist, actually, an Italian physicist, extremely famous. And this satellite, which is a NASA satellite, which was launched in 2008, is named after Enrico Fermi. And he was actually one of the people who did the pioneering work on the high-energy particles we call cosmic rays, which we'll talk about later, perhaps. Okay. So Enrico Fermi is the name of this satellite. And this satellite is actually quite a big thing. And it's measuring gamma rays. And if you don't know what a gamma ray is, just think of it as an X-ray, but an X-ray with much higher energy than a normal X-ray, which, for example, when you get X-rayed in the hospital or something, you have X-rays of a certain energy, a certain power. And our gamma rays have about 1,000 times more energy than that. So
this is really what we call the highest energy photons that we see.
They're not the highest energy. They're actually even higher energy ones, which you measure actually from the ground with other methods. So these are kind of in the middle. And they have about, let's see, how can I say it, 100 million electron volts is how we measure them. It's hard to actually turn that into units which people can perhaps understand.
But an electron volt is a sort of typical energy of a transition of an atom.
Yes.
So,
and it's like the light you see. The light you see with your eyes about one electron volt, and we're talking about 100 million.
Okay, so each photon is really packing a punch.
It packs a punch, and when I compare with my optical astronomers, you know, they're measuring one EV, so we measure one of our photons. It actually has probably as much energy as they measure in their whole career.
And probably a lot more than any radio astronomers measure in their whole career.
The radio astronomers have about a factor of a million less. When they complain that our instruments are primitive by some standards, I say, well, every single one of our photons, 100 million of yours. We get our own back. But by comparison, we measure relatively few of them, but we still measure millions of them now. Well, the history of gamma ray astronomy, it started in the 60s, and then we had the very first satellite. It started off actually with balloons. Mm-hmm. So you make the balloon flight, could measure a few gamma rays. And then in the late 60s, there was an experiment, a satellite, and they measured about 500 gamma rays.
Wow.
So they made the first map of the sky.
So every photon was really precious in that.
Absolutely. Analyzed it by hand, and then came another one a bit later, which got 5,000. And then in the 70s, there was an experiment called COSB, which I was also involved with in the later stages. Unfortunately, the British started off in COSB, but then they decided they couldn't do it anymore, so became a European, and I had to actually move to Milan at that point in order to follow the COSB data. COSB data. So. But that was beautiful. They got about 100,000 photons and made a beautiful map of the galaxy in gamma rays, which became actually quite famous.
So what does the gamma ray sky look like if you look out into the universe?
Basically what you see is you see the Milky Way shining. You see the band of the Milky Way. That's what you see. That's where most of these gamma rays come from. But you also see quasars and you see pulsars. At the beginning there are only very few, but now this new satellite Fermi has measured hundreds and even thousands of these sources, let's say pulsars and extragalactic, let's say, sources outside, let's say, quasars.
So you're looking over all distances, because the pulsars are sort of comparatively close in our galactic neighbourhood, but the quasars are the most distant ones.
Yeah, we can see lots of pulsars, and we can see lots of these very distant quasars too, out to really big distances, like half the radius of the universe is the limit we can actually reach. And what's interesting is some of these sources, some of these extragalactic sources, some of these quasars are actually giving out most of their energy in the gamma ray range. So that's very interesting from the physical point of view.
Okay, so until you look in gamma rays, then you're not really seeing most of what the quasar is giving
you. Yeah. And this can be related, of course, you measure these things with all sorts of telescopes. You measure them with radio telescopes and with normal optical telescopes and with X-ray telescopes and with gamma rays. When you put all those things together, you actually measure with wavelengths, which are changing by about a factor of 100 million or something, different wavelengths. And then you put all that together and you can do lots of nice physics with that, because you see so many different wavelengths at the same time from the same object.
So then when you look a bit closer to home, like at the interstellar medium of our own galaxy, that's obviously a diffuse thing. It's kind of the gas between the stars rather than the compact sources. What sort of things do you then see?
Well, that you're exactly right, that you see the gas which is between the stars, and you see it because what we call cosmic rays, which are these high energy particles, which I was talking at the beginning that Fermi was one of the first people to work on, they actually interact with the interstellar gas. So if you have a cosmic ray proton, that's like a hydrogen atom, let's say, but going very fast, and it hits an interstellar gas atom, they make an interaction, just like at the at CERN in the LHC or something, full of things like that going on, of course, but they have any out there in interstellar space. And they make gamma rays just by these interactions.
So the cosmic rays themselves are also packing a tremendous punch then?
Yeah, the cosmic rays are something which are actually filling the whole of the galaxy. And the thing about cosmic rays is you can also measure them directly at the Earth by sending up balloons. In fact, we can mention that cosmic rays were discovered. It will be actually a centenary of cosmic rays next year. And they were discovered by a guy called Victor Hess in Austria I guess it must be 1912, because it means that the centenary is next year. You can find on the web, if you look, you find pictures of this Austrian guy going up in a balloon to a couple of kilometers of what the height was, and then actually finding that you measure the cosmic rays, they're everywhere. They're on the Earth. They're going through your body all the time. But nobody knew what they were. So what he did, he went up in a balloon to find out. He expected them to get less as you go up. In fact, they got more. The intensity increased. So conclusion, they're coming from outside the Earth. Mm-hmm. Nobody knew before. And so that's the discovery of the fact that cosmic rays come from outside the Earth. And that was the start.
They do show up in a few things. I know that sometimes when astronauts take photographs at the International Space Station, you get these streaks across the picture and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, they're actually dangerous for astronauts, of course, these particles, because they ionize. Yeah, they're basically dangerous once you get outside the Earth, so you have to protect yourself against them. Okay, so these cosmic rays are everywhere, and you can measure them directly in satellites and in balloons. So it's a whole zoo of cosmic rays. There's the protons, and then there's all the other type of elements you can imagine, up to iron, and even uranium.
So really heavy atomic nuclei.
Yeah, you can get really heavy cosmic rays, up to really heavy things.
And do we know more now about where they come from and what they are? Because they still seem to be quite mysterious.
They are actually still mysterious, and nobody really knows, one must say. People think they came from exploding stars, like what we call supernovae remnants, which are, a supernova is when a star explodes, and afterwards it makes this big bubble, which is called a supernova remnant, which lasts a few thousand years. And in this time, when they're in this bubble phase, they accelerate cosmic rays, because they are shock waves, basically. So we think it's called shock acceleration. It happens by shock acceleration in the interstellar medium. This is the current theory which seems to hold up. So these cosmic rays then fill the galaxy, and then when they interact with the interstellar gas, they make gamma rays, and that's why we can see the Milky Way shining.
So you're not really able to be directional enough to see the cosmic rays directly and say, oh, well, they've come from over there, or
no, that's a very interesting point, actually. You would think that you could, because you can measure the direction of the cosmic ray in your experiment, but you don't actually know where it came from. And the reason is that they're charged particles. A charged particle moving in a magnetic field, it gets bent. changes its direction. And the Milky Way is actually full of magnetic fields. It has actually quite a strong, relatively strong magnetic field by, let's say, by astronomical standards. And that means that even if a cosmic ray, even if it's directed immediately towards you when it's emitted, it actually gets so bent that when it comes to the Earth, it's going in a completely different direction. Okay. So there's no way that you can just look out there and say that cosmic ray is coming from this pulsar of this object, because it's been completely bent. But this is, there are cosmic rays which have energies so high that they hardly see the magnetic field, they're hardly affected. And these are measured in what are called the giant air shower rays, of which, by the way, Havera Park was a very famous air shower ray in Leeds.
Okay.
Until it was closed down. This measured cosmic rays at such high energies that you could, in principle, expect to see where they're coming from. And there are new experiments now which are actually finding some of these cosmic rays apparently coming from quasars, perhaps.
Right.
Or nearby quasar-like things, or big extragalactic galaxies.
And they're coming all the way to Earth and then interacting with our atmosphere, creating a shower of
air. This is the only way you can see them, is because they're you get about one of these things per square kilometer per century.
Yeah. Right, okay.
Which is why you need these enormous, you use the atmosphere to detect them. And that's a completely different way of detecting them, but you can only do it that way. And there are very large experiments of this sort under construction at the present time to try and improve the number of these very high energy cosmic rays you can measure. But that's something quite different from what Fermi can measure, which is down in the, what was I saying, 1,000 million electron volt range.
So when you look out at the Milky Way with Fermi and at the interstellar medium, what processes are you seeing at the moment?
Well, the first one is, I said, you see the interaction of the cosmic rays with the gas. And you also see in other types of cosmic rays, the electron cosmic rays, they interact actually with the photons, with the optical, the visible light in the galaxy, and also the microwave background photons, which are absolutely everywhere. Mm. And they interact. So the electrons interact with those photons by a process called the Compton effect, which is named after a famous physicist called Compton. And they also make some of the gamma rays which we see. And that's particularly interesting because in this talk I was also trying to put the link between the Planck satellite and the Fermi satellite. One of the links is that these electrons, by this Compton effect, mm-hmm. they make gamma rays, but they also make synchrotron radiation, which is when the electrons spiral in the magnetic field. And the synchrotron radiation is one of the things which Planck can measure.
So Planck, looking at much lower frequencies, measuring the cosmic microwave background, also picks up the signature from these interactions.
And in fact, for some of them, it's what they call a foreground, in other words. In order to see the microwave background and do cosmology, for them, these things are disturbing effects, and they really just want to get rid of them, eliminate them. For us, that's the interesting thing, because we want to see the galaxy. So some of them want to eliminate it, and some of them want to study it. But by combining the data of the Fermi and the Planck satellite and other satellites in the future, you have such a wide range of different views that you can try and disentangle these processes. So I think that link will be very important in the future.
And can you map the magnetic field of the galaxy in this way?
You can indeed, especially experiments like Planck, they're going to measure this synchrotron radiation due to the electrons. And that depends on the magnetic field. And so by actually mapping that radiation, you can get at least some idea on how the magnetic field is structured, like it's some huge spiral. Mm-hmm. We think that there's a lot of the magnetic field in the galaxy is shaped like a huge spiral, in fact, just like the spiral arms.
So sort of wound up like the spiral arms by the rotation?
Yes, it's made by some kind of dynamo problem. But there's lots of other ways of measuring magnetic fields, actually. You can look at pulsars and the certain aspects of the radio emission from pulsars which are directly related to the magnetic field. So That's another way of doing it. And you can also look at the a similar thing, looking at quasars and other sources outside the galaxy, and they also can be measured in the radio. Mm-hmm. And this gives more information about magnetic fields. So it turns out that magnetic fields, although one must say that magnetic fields have been to some extent neglected in the past, they've been always a sort of secondary interest to many astronomers, but we think they're actually a central part of the way the interstellar medium or where the galaxy works.
So in the colloquium, you also mentioned the sun, observations of the sun and the cosmic rays.
Yes, that was something which was very satisfying for me, because it turns out that nobody had really expected to see gamma rays from the sun, except when it's really active, like solar flares, which are going off. By the way, the sun is becoming more active now. You can see sunspots if you look. But it's actually emitting gamma rays, and it's emitting by the same process as I was talking before, this Compton process. Now, the sun is, of course, emitting, by definition, lots and lots of photons, which you see with your eye. And these cosmic ray electrons are everywhere, so they're in the heliosphere, in the places between us and the sun. And they do this Compton scattering. And this means that then you get a sort of halo around the sun of gamma rays, like several degrees across. And this is kind of obvious. It's actually very easy to calculate. Any second-year physics student could probably calculate it, but nobody had actually done it. And a few years ago, we did it, and it was obvious the sun should be shining in gamma rays. And we decided to look in some old data. And we actually saw it very faint. It was enough to detect it. Now, Fermi, this new satellite, is actually seeing the sun every day by this process. And it's actually quite a strong, it's shining quite strongly in gamma rays.
So that's the glow of the cosmic rays interacting with the heliosphere of the sun.
With the heliosphere, yeah. There's also the sun itself. It's also shining in gamma rays because some other cosmic rays actually interact with the atmosphere of the sun, right in the solar atmosphere, and they give some other gamma rays too. But they're like very concentrated on the surface. So we see two things. We see something from the surface, which is, looks like to us like just a point on the sky following the sun. And we see this huge glow around the sun as well. So that is something which is going to be quite interesting for solar physicists, I think. So the sun is becoming more active, and that what that means is it means the opposite for us, because when the sun is active, it pushes the cosmic rays away. Mm-hmm. It's called the solar wind. So we expect that in the next years we will see less gamma rays, just because the cosmic rays have been pushed out. And by measuring that, we can learn something about how the solar wind is working, perhaps.
So, yeah, the formation of these cosmic rays in the sun, they come from nuclear fusion, or like, where are they? Because it's different from the processes that you see in the supernova remnant, right?
No, this is the same. It's actually the cosmic ray protons,
okay,
which are doing these the same as the interaction with interstellar gas, which I talked about earlier. It's that process, but it's happening in the solar atmosphere, which is gas. So.
One of the things that caught my attention in your talk was a reference to giant gamma ray bubbles. And I thought that was really interesting, telling us something perhaps about the history of our own galaxy.
Yeah, this came as a bit of a surprise. When we look at the Fermi data, we make maps of the whole sky. And a lot of the things we see, we think we understand. But when you actually subtract off all the parts which we think we understand, you make a map of the sky and you see features which you sort of didn't expect. And one of the things we didn't expect was indeed things which have got dubbed bubbles. When we don't really know what they are, but the thing which gives a hint is the fact that they are centered in the direction of the center of the galaxy. But they're not actually coming from the center of the galaxy. They're like huge bubbles extending tens of degrees on both sides of the center of the galaxy. And since we know the center of the galaxy is a long way away, the bubbles almost by association also must be a long way away. But because they're very big on the sky, they must be really huge in reality.
So they've been expanding for a long time.
Perhaps. Yeah, they've been there. We don't know how long they've been there anyway. They're huge, like a significant fraction of the size of the galaxy itself, and expanding, say, thousands of light years on either side of the galaxy. And so nobody knows what they are, but what it can be is that the center of the galaxy was acting like a quasar a few million years ago. And so it then actually had things like jets and beams accelerating particles into the galaxy. And it's not doing this anymore, but if it was doing that in the past, it might have filled up these bubbles, be the cause of these bubbles. So it's a suggestion that the center of our galaxy was maybe doing something in the past.
So it ties in with the idea that possibly all large galaxies at some stage of their evolution have a phase when they're very active.
Yeah.
And that could have been a remnant of our own time when we were shining out across the universe, I suppose.
So, yeah, so we're talking about timescales of a few million years. So whatever happened, it's not happening now, but it happened in the past.
And if it was that, what would have been the cause of all that energy?
Well, just like in these active, in these quasars, the origin is always some kind of supermassive black hole, which generates all the particles.
So you also mentioned dark gas that you are observing, or you think you are.
Yes, but it must be absolutely not confused with things which are called dark matter. This is nothing to do with that. Just to make that clear. Now, with radio telescopes and with many different ways, you can actually measure the gas in the galaxy because it shines in various ways. And we think we have a pretty good inventory of what's out there. But it turns out that with gamma rays, because of these interactions of cosmic rays with gas, they really, as it were, see all the gas by this fact that it's shining, by the interactions with cosmic rays, independent of the gas that actually shining by itself. So the cosmic rays see everything, you can say. You know, they just detect everything. And there are hints then from Fermi that there's actually more gas out there than we thought was before by other methods. And therefore we called it dark gas because we couldn't see it with any other technique. And there are actually hints then coming from other types of experiments like Planck, which you can see in other ways, that indeed there is gas out there which we couldn't see by any other way. And the gamma rays are going to be the best way of at least detecting all of it. And then we have to scratch our heads to see actually what this dark gas really is, and why isn't it shining? Why can't we see it? And maybe with other methods we can actually see it in the future. So the gamma rays are sort of pioneering our detection of these new parts of the interstellar medium.
At the moment, you have any idea what could it be? Or
yeah, it's probably molecular hydrogen. We see molecular hydrogen by other methods, but this is a kind of molecular hydrogen which, for various reasons, can't be seen by any other technique.
Is that because it's rather cold?
Normally, we detect molecular hydrogen indirectly because it is associated with a molecule of carbon monoxide, which can be measured very easily. And that happens in very dense clouds in the galaxy of gas. And probably this molecular hydrogen is much more diffuse, and it's not associated with this carbon monoxide. And that's why it makes it hard to see it with radio telescopes and by other methods. So it's probably more diffuse, and that's why it's really hard to detect.
And then one of the last things you spoke about was using gamma rays and cosmic rays to get a bit of an idea of what our galaxy would look like from the outside, which, of course, is a rather difficult thing for us to do. So could you tell us about that?
Yeah, it is difficult because we're sitting right in the middle of the... not in the middle of the galaxy, but we're sitting inside the galaxy, so it's actually very hard to get an idea how it would look like, for example, from an astronomer on the Andromeda galaxy. Mm-hmm. Suppose we had the Fermi satellite and the Planck satellite from some civilization on in Andromeda, what would they see from our galaxy? And we're only interested in this case in the total emission, because seen from so far, with a telescope like Fermi, the galaxy just looks like a dot. So what we try to do is to work out what the emission of the galaxy would look like, seen from some distant place. Because we measure many galaxies ourselves from here, we would like then compare our galaxy with what ours would look like. So we made a distribution of the radiation, basically, from the radio all the way up to gamma rays, mm-hmm. and in cosmic rays, and this is a fun thing to do, because then you can compare with what we see for other galaxies from our point of view. So that was just something new we did. Turned out to be quite interesting.
And where are we bright? What sort of wavelengths do we
radiate? Oh, we're most bright, of course, light. Absolutely dominating is the optical part, as you might expect. I mean, there's about a million times more radiation coming in the part you can see with your eye than in the cosmic rays. And in the radio and gamma rays, it's also much less. But nevertheless, it's very significant. And of course, there are other galaxies where the radio is much more important than in our own galaxy. Our own galaxy is relatively weak in radio.
Do we look kind of normal compared to other galaxies?
No, we're a pretty typical normal galaxy. We look very much like Andromeda. I think an astronomer Andromeda, looking at our galaxy, would see something pretty similar.
Okay, well, we wish you very good luck with the rest of the results from Fermi. Thanks very much for being interviewed.
Thank you very much.